This show is brought to you by 13 Turns, a new horror anthology by Kevin Carr. 13 jolting tales of terror, murder, and the macabre. Only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Greetings, Scotch Potatoes, across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new superhero movie, Wonder Woman. Also, Captain Underpants, which, from a costume standpoint, they're kind of the same thing. Also, The Wedding Plan. I'll also be talking about some news, the trailer park, box office predictions, and, of course, the home cinema roundup featuring The Ticket. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me at fatguysatthemovies.com and facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
No, I'm not. I'm not talking about Kathy Griffin. No, I'm sorry. I'm not getting into that. No, look, it's... Kathy Griffin. And a lot of the people going crazy about it, being outraged and being especially outraged and then not being outraged and then people being outraged because you're not outraged. I mean, let's forget the fact that there was a movie called Death of a President about the assassination of a sitting president, which was George W. Bush. Let's forget the fact that Obama was being hung in effigy at rallies and that sort of thing, with multiple lynching imagery calling back to civil rights and Civil War days. Let's forget the fact that Abraham Lincoln, of all people, was roasted in a satire of the Battle Hymn of the Republic, calling for him to be hung by a sour apple tree. And also, same goes for Jefferson Davis. Look, I mean, this kind of stuff happens, and it's inappropriate. I don't know if we need to call the Secret Service on anybody here. No matter who it is, the filmmakers of Death of a President shouldn't have the Secret Service coming down their neck. Kathy Griffin shouldn't have the Secret Service coming after her, and all the people who are hanging Obama in effigy, they shouldn't have the Secret Service come after them. There's a huge difference between that and directly threatening a president. So I don't even want to talk about that. But before you even talk about any of that, before this week, did any of you, anywhere, ever think about Kathy Griffin? Had anyone even considered her comedy? Had anyone even watched her in anything, television, movie, old movie, or not? Nobody did. Now, people can't stop talking about her. An apology or not, bad taste or not, she got what she wanted, she got the press. So everybody having outrage over Kathy Griffin, you're giving her exactly what she wants. And now you've made me do it. Let's move on. Dwayne Johnson, the would-be presidential candidate for 2020, he stepped into a bit of a bear trap last week when, during the release of Baywatch, he lashed out at some critics online through Twitter, which is always where this stuff happens. I know a lot of these critics, and these critics lost their minds. They went collectively bonkers over this. How dare Dwayne Johnson lash out at them and blame them for the poor performance of his movie. And I remember saying, okay, look, I was not a fan of Baywatch. If you listened to my show last week, you know, I did not like Baywatch. But look, Dwayne Johnson coming out in defense of Baywatch, that's his job. When celebrities are signed to a movie, especially celebrities with a social media reach like him, you know, you get that with people like Kevin Hart as well. He's got a huge social media reach. When you hire somebody to be in that movie, that you're hiring them also to promote it. And I would have expected nothing less from Dwayne Johnson than to support his movie. Whether he liked it or not, whether or not we get the obligatory story in 4 or 5 years of Dwayne Johnson saying, yeah, Baywatch was a piece of crap. He has to promote it now. That's his job. That's what he's doing. That's how he puts bread on the table. That's how he puts a roof over his head. Our job is to criticize movies as we see them. People are acting right now, and we'll talk about this in a little bit in a later segment when I talk about the box office. People are acting like suddenly now critics, good or bad reviews, are make or breaking movies. But we've got an entire slate of Transformers movies and a new one coming out this summer that completely prove the opposite. So we need to back off this, because Dwayne Johnson, he's allowed to defend his movie. Speaking of Transformers, it came out this week, there was a rumor that Transformers 58, whatever the one that's coming out this summer, The Last Night, has a running time of over 3 hours. And then, of course, Michael Bay took to Twitter because, again, that's where everything happens nowadays. And he said, no. It's that those are wrong. It's shorter than the last couple ones by, in his quotes, a lot. Well, considering each movie has gotten 10 minutes more added to it each time, the last one was 165 minutes. For those who don't know how to do the math, that's 2 hours and 45 minutes. There's no reason any Transformers movie should be longer than an hour and 45 minutes. So that's already an hour too long. And the one before it was 154 minutes. So this movie could be 2 hours and 20 minutes, which is way too long for a Transformers movies, and it's still a lot less than these other two. And then finally, a little bit of Wonder Woman news, since we'll be talking about Wonder Woman here in a little bit. Wonder Woman is officially banned in Lebanon, mainly because Gal Gadot is an Israeli actress. It's also, you know, conversely, looking at a huge box office bow in Israel for the exact same reason. She's an Israeli actress, not just of Israeli descent or somebody who's born in Israel like Natalie Portman. I mean, she was in the army. I mean, she's full-blown Israeli and then moved to America to do movies. So, yeah, of course, you know, hometown girl does well and makes a big blockbuster movie. Of course, it's going to do well in her home country. So it kind of balances it out. I mean, I really don't know if the global box office is going to be hurting because Lebanon isn't showing this movie. And I can't imagine, I mean, Israel's a small country. I can't imagine Israel making up a huge proportion of the global box office, which is going to be in the hundreds of millions. But that just shows an interesting way of the world balancing itself. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to talk about is The Mountain Between Us, starring Kate Winslet and Idris Elba. It opens on October 20th, and it's about two people whose plane crashes in the high mountains, and nobody knows where they are.
Alex,
can you look at me?
You really hurt your leg.
The phone smashed. My phone has no signal, and we're pretty high up on the mountain.
If we stay here, we're safe.
If we leave search and rescue, they're less likely to find us.
Look, I don't want to die up here because you're too scared to take a risk.
Someone's looking for us.
The pilot didn't file a flight plan.
Nobody knows where we are. We're all we've got, me and you.
This comes out October 20th, so it's already starting to inch into award season territory. Not quite yet, because if it were in November, it would have been a little bit clearer into that fray. And I mean, you've got two award winners, Idris Elba and Kate Winslet, and both of them are great actors. They're both very good at what they do, and both very compelling on screen. I just hope it's more than just your standard survival movie. I hope it's more than just people trudging through the wilderness. I mean, it looks gorgeous. I mean, the scenery looks great. It looks like it's, I don't know where it takes place. I don't know whether it's like in North America, like in Alaska area, or I don't know. It might be, heck, for all I know, it's in Finland, but it looks like it could be an interesting movie more for the interaction between two very good actors against a very beautiful backdrop. I just hope that the script is there to support it. The next movie I want to hit really quickly is Paddington 2. Opens on January 12th.
Hello, window cleaner.
What is your name?
Paddington.
Paddington?
Yes.
You're where? Is a bear on your roof?
The hunt begins.
Mysterious things have been happening all over town.
We've got to need a foolproof plan.
Of all the bright spots of this week, I've had a couple good moments this week. But really, honestly, watching this trailer gave me probably one of the most giddy fun times I've had just in this short little minute-long trailer. It's a teaser, really, and it just has such a warm, fuzzy feel to it. I remember when the first Paddington came out, didn't get a whole lot of play in the U.S. press because it sort of fell under Weinstein's banner in their push for award season and nothing really came of it. I remember the screening they had here in Columbus was like December 19th. Nobody went to it. I was the only one there because everybody else had gotten started early on Christmas. But I loved Paddington. I thought the first one was so charming and had such a great cast. And I'm very much looking forward to Paddington 2 just because it looks like it brings back the same look and feel and charm of the first film. That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Captain Underpants with a very special guest reviewer.
Stop it now.
Kevin Carr's new horror anthology, 13 Turns, brings you a series of stories inspired by H.P. Lovecraft, Stephen King, The Twilight Zone, and classic gothic horror. A man is trapped, forced to murder himself every day of his unnatural life. Necromancers resurrect two famous figures from history for sport. A beautiful day in an amusement park turns into a murder investigation after a mysterious death on a roller coaster. A researcher in an abandoned prison discovers a portal to another dimension. 13 Turns by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited.
Buy underoos where you buy underwear. It's underwear that is fun to wear.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr for our first movie I'm going to review this week. That is Captain Underpants. I am bringing back, by popular demand, a guest reviewer we had on the show a couple weeks ago, and that would be Nicholas Carr. Say hello, Nicholas.
I'm back.
He's now got a little more confidence behind the mic, so now we're getting more humor. He's going to work out some stuff. He's going to be working on some stand-up routines. Nick, you're back. Remember what we talked about last time?
Yeah, we talked about...
Diarrhea of a Wimpy Kid?
Yeah.
Wow, it's been that long.
Yeah.
You've been on the show once, and you can't even remember what we talked about. Let me ask you about this with the Diarrhea of a Wimpy Kid reboot that we saw. And that you reviewed, which you said it totally rocked, right?
Yeah.
Did you say totally rocked or just kind of rocked?
I think kind of.
Kind of? Okay. Well, that one did not do very well.
No.
No. Were you surprised it didn't do as well as the other movies?
Not really.
Well, I noticed you didn't like, your big beef was with Roderick. You didn't like the recasting of Roderick, right?
No.
Yeah. So, and I know a lot of fans didn't like that either. So that, I think, suffered a bit. They sort of started Donald Trump type hashtags with not my Roderick, I think was actually a trending thing on Twitter at one point, maybe during the casting or the early trailers for this.
Yeah.
Yeah. So did you get involved in that? You're not on social media yet.
No, I need a phone.
Okay. All right. I guess I just been taken to task on that one. Now, before we actually talk about the movie Captain Underpants, I need to talk to somebody because I never read the original manuscripts translated from the ancient Greek of Captain Underpants. You've read the books. First of all, there's a lot of books, aren't there?
Yes.
Do you know how many? You knew how many Diary of a Wimpy Kid books there were.
Yeah, I have no idea how many.
Then what are you doing on the show?
I liked the movie, and people said I should review it.
Oh, now he's pulling out the fact that we had somebody on Twitter actually request Nick to review Captain Underpants, because, of course, they need a 9-year-old's opinion for this, because me, as a completely sophomoric, infantile human male, I in my love of fart jokes, I'm not enough to review it, I guess?
No.
All right. So you don't remember how many books, but you've read the books, right?
The first one, Super Diaper Baby, and the Super Diaper.
I hear that was based on the Shakespeare
Dog
play.
Dogman 2, and Super Diaper Baby 2.
Can I just ask a question? And this is a real question. In Super Diaper Baby 1 and Super Diaper Baby 2, was it number 1 and number 2 in the diaper? Or is that just the name of the books?
That's just the name of the books.
Okay, so there was plenty of number one and number two jokes for both.
Basically.
Now, what is your opinion of the books themselves? You've said you've read 4 books.
Yes.
And you enjoy them.
Yes.
What do you like most about them?
The body humor, the comic-like stuff.
The funny stuff.
Yes.
You think it's funny to laugh.
Yes.
That's kind of part of the theme of this movie, though, isn't
it?
Yeah. All right. Well, you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr and Nicholas Carr right now, because we're going to be talking about Captain Underpants. First of all, let's play the trailer for Captain Underpants. Two prank-happy elementary school kids accidentally hypnotize their grumpy principal into thinking he's the superhero, Captain Underpants.
Tra-la-la!
Hi, I'm George Beard, and this is my best friend, Harold Hutchins.
We just make comics and try to make each other laugh.
And this old guy is Mr. Krupp. He's the worst principal in the world.
I told you I would get you one day. I'm going to have you two placed in separate classes.
Put the pen down, Mr. Krupp, or we'll hypnotize you. When I snap my fingers, you will obey our every command.
You
You are now the amazing Captain Underpants!
Tra-la-la!
I honestly didn't think that would happen.
Let's get your take. What did you think of the movie?
It was awesome.
Awesome?
Yes.
Should it win the Academy Award?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
For the best picture?
Yes.
What made this such a good movie?
The body humor.
We've already got that established.
Just everything about the board. It. Everything about it.
Everything about it?
Yes.
Well, you got to be more specific. You know, if you're going to be a film reviewer, you got to say that. Did you like the story? Did you like the characters? Did you like the animation style?
Yeah. I like the characters more than I like the animation.
You not like the animation? The animation,
I liked it.
You know, it reminded me of Peanuts.
Yeah.
Do you remember the Peanuts movie? I mean, not as charming as Charlie Brown is, and a couple more fart jokes.
Yeah.
But, I thought it was good animation. I didn't think the animation was over-stylized, but I thought it, at least I remember seeing the Captain Underpants books, and I remember flipping through them. So I'm familiar with what they are and I never read one. I guess I just didn't have time to read the complexity of Dave Pilkey's Captain Underpants books. But I thought that the movie captured the animation style, because of course it's drawn like the kids in their comic books.
Yeah.
Do you think it was an accurate portrayal of it? I mean, if you've read the books, do you think the kids who read the books are going to like it?
Yeah.
Were you embarrassed when I showed up at the movie in my Captain Underpants outfit, just wearing my tidy whiteys and a cape?
You didn't do that.
Yeah, I did.
No, you didn't. No, you didn't.
Are you sure?
Yes.
You didn't see me. I snuck out and I did it.
No, you didn't.
There was this family right behind us, and they decided we're in an empty theater, and this family came and sat, like, literally directly behind us. And the guy looked a lot like me, the dad, one of the dads.
Yeah.
And I thought he and I should have gone out and wore, you know, stripped down, did our Captain Underpants thing. What do you think would have happened if we had shown up at the movie theater, and I would have just been in underpants and a cape, because that's important. Underpants and a cape, and underpants that like go all the way up over my belly button.
Yeah.
Would you think they would have kicked me out?
They would have just known that you were going to see Captain Underpants.
They would have been like, that's an awesome cosplay. We're going to let you in.
Yeah.
That would have been like showing up for Wonder Woman this weekend dressed as Wonder Woman.
No,
which I also did, by the way. Thank you very much. How do you know you didn't go see Wonder Woman with me?
Because you don't have all the Wonder Woman stuff.
I do not have. I do not have all the equipment that Wonder Woman has. That's for sure. Well, I have my own, but we won't go into that. Yeah. You'll talk about that later in fifth grade when you have the introduction to that class. But let's wrap up the review. We're getting sidetracked here. I thought it was actually kind of fun and clever and cute.
Yes.
You know what? If you're going to see a movie called Captain Underpants, I don't think you can get upset with the number of poopy, farty, wee wee jokes. No. Vomit jokes, anything. You know that's coming, so it should not. If your big complaint about Captain Underpants is its sophomoric and banal humor, you're going to watch the wrong movie, right? You don't know what I said there.
No.
I kind of went around the Horn of Africa with that statement.
Yeah.
All right. Bottom line, though, Captain Underpants, did it rock or did it suck? Kind of
rock.
Just rocked right away.
Yeah.
Just start off.
Yeah.
Just knock it out of the park.
It rocks.
Excellent.
The professor's name.
I'm not gonna. That's a spoiler. Well, I can tell you what the professor's last name is, right? You want to say it? You can say it.
Poopy Professor Poopy Pants.
Poopy Professor Poopy Pants, or just Professor Poopy Pants.
Professor Poopy Pants.
It's okay, but there's more to it. So you said rocks. I'm gonna say it kind of rocks. So
that's because I'm a 9-year-old boy kid.
A 9-year-old boy kid. I'm a 9-year-old human child. All right. So I said it kind of rocks.
Yes.
And that should be good. I'm like, I was pleasantly surprised with it.
It kind of rocks.
So, thank you, Poopy Nicholas Carr.
What?
Well,
no.
You said Poopy Professor Poopy Pants.
Yes.
You started off with Poopy.
Yes.
You started with the Poopy.
No, wait, no.
There's a lot of poop. You need to clean up your act, Nicholas Carr. All right. Thank you for coming on the show again.
You're welcome.
Now I need to go to a break. When we come back, I'm going to be talking about Wonder Woman. Take a seasonal trip to the zombie apocalypse. Kevin Carr's new novelettes, Not the End and Gobble, offer a new take on the zombie nightmare.
In Not the End, a man wakes up from a coma to find a viral outbreak has sent the world on the defensive. He must escape and learn the true nature of the zombies. The story Gobble takes the readers back to the beginning of the outbreak, which erupts at a tense Thanksgiving dinner. Not the End and Gobble by Kevin Carr are available now. Only 99 cents in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk a little bit about Wonder Woman and her satin tights. I love the fact that the satin tights were so important to that old TV show that it made its way into the theme song. I mean, if that's not misogynistic 1970s, I don't know. Anyways, before I even talk about the movie Wonder Woman, I need to get through some of the murky gender politics that's happening right now. And this is what bothers me. And I remember saying this for the last couple of weeks. I've been complaining because I said, I wish this movie could just come out and be judged as it is and not be judged as this feminist flag waving banner. And even now I'm like the weekend, as you're coming into the weekend, you're seeing people tweet stuff out and say, oh, this is good. We need to make this make $100 million. We need to work on this. This needs to be seen. And people are talking about going to see Wonder Woman for the cause, where I'm like, well, there's a small group of people that are going to do that. And that's going to impact the box office very little in terms of the people that are going to see Wonder Woman as a cause. Now, those people are the ones who are generating this buzz on social media. But the bottom line is Wonder Woman is going to do well or not do well because it's a good movie or not. But there's been so much with just the angst of the gender politics that people getting their back up and fighting before there's even something to fight about. I remember the earlier this week, the Hollywood Reporter ran a story basically saying that it was a risk for Warner Brothers to hire Patty Jenkins as the director because her only claim to fame was an $8 million indie in their background. And of course, everyone started often beating their chest going, oh, but look at Mark Webb. He only did an independent film and you gave him Amazing Spider-Man. Or look at Gareth Edwards. He did Monsters and then he was given Godzilla. And then Star Wars, and look at Colin Trevorrow, did Safety Not Guaranteed, and then he got Jurassic World. I'm like, whoa, but there's a huge difference here. All those guys you just mentioned all kind of fell into a decent time window. Like when Mark Webb did 500 Days of Summer, that was in what, 2007 was when that came out, and then it kind of had to get through 2008 to really be a bona fide hit. And then it was only 4 years later that The Amazing Spider-Man came out. So it was just a couple years after he came on the scene. The same thing, Safety Not Guaranteed. There was a relatively short couple year window between that and when he got given Jurassic World, or when Gareth Edwards went from Monsters to Godzilla. And even then, Godzilla, he got kind of took it on the chin because it was too much like Monsters. But the difference there is Patty Jenkins, she did Monster, which, yes, was an Academy Award winning film. It got an Oscar for Charlize Theron, but that was made in 2003. That's 14 years ago. Even if you count from when she took over and started production on this movie, it's well more than a decade had passed since she had made that movie when they gave her this film. And she had done a smattering of TV. So I wouldn't even say that it was a risk because all she did was an indie. It's a risk that she did an indie almost 15 years ago, and that's pretty much it. Now, that's not a criticism of her. I'm just saying, yes, that represents what the risk that Warner Brothers took on her. And then on top of you got stuff like people saying it's the first female superhero movie. It's not. We had Catwoman, which was terrible, and we had Elektra, which is eh. It's the first big one, but it's the first one in this expanded DC universe where it's a major player. And the reason I think this is in fact different is because if you say, what are the main characters in the DC comics? They're going to say Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman is going to be the third. If you talk about Justice League, Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, before you get to The Flash, Hawkman, Aquaman, all those people, you're going to get to Wonder Woman within the top three. And that's important. And yes, there should have been a Wonder Woman movie a long time ago. And there's like this thing where Austin, the Alamo Drafthouse in Austin, is doing like a women-only screening of Wonder Woman, which is kind of, I mean, that's like so stupid because on one hand, who cares? It's like Tuesday. I mean, it's not like it's an exclusive chance to see Wonder Woman. They've got plenty of other shows. So it's not like they're keeping guys from seeing Wonder Woman. It's just they've made this one screening. But on the other hand, discrimination is discrimination. Now, I'm not somebody who's going men's rights discrimination, but I am pointing out the fact that by choosing to exclude a certain gender, you are engaging in discrimination. It's irrelevant to the way of the world, but the reason But the reason to do it is bad. It's sort of fruit of the poison tree. You know, you don't fix social problems with causing more social problems. I just look at this as the people in the Alamo Drafthouse is just making a rule they know is going to cheese people off and poking the bear and not actually helping the situation and making it worse. All this gender politics wrapped up in Wonder Woman. And just ignore that. Let's move on and just look at it as a superhero movie. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Finally, let's talk about Wonder Woman the film. A young Amazon leaves her home on Paradise Island to be dragged into World War I, where she tries to defeat Ares, the god of war.
What is this place? Who are you?
It is our sacred duty to defend the world.
Right. Whoever you are in more danger than you think.
Be careful, Diana. If no one else will defend the world, then I must. I am Diana of Themyscira, daughter of Hippolyta. In the name of all that is good, your wrath upon this world is over.
Now, strictly as a superhero movie, this is a good one. It definitely is. And it's an origin story, too, which you need for Wonder Woman. Not that her origin's complex or anything. It's just we haven't had it. I mean, the last time she's really seen the screen with any sort of depth was the Linda Carter series. So, I mean, we're due for an origin for Wonder Woman. And in this way, it's kind of this mix between Thor and Captain America, if you remember those from the Marvel Universe. It's like Thor because it's sort of this race of godlike characters that she's kind of pulled out and a fish out of water story, which is very much what Thor was. But it's also like Captain America, the First Avenger, because it puts it against a backdrop of a world war. And it works. There's some great action sequences. Now, there's some not so good things about it, like a good chunk of the first act. The dialogue's not very good in the beginning. And the accents, I don't know what's going on with the accents in this movie. I mean, I know that Gal Gadot's Israeli and she barely has a handle on emoting in the English. So I'm not asking her to change her accent, but everybody on Paradise Island has just a weird accent. And I guess, I don't know what they're trying to do, but I don't think it worked. But also there's some visual effects that really fall apart in that first third of the movie. There's some that were jarringly bad. And it's just right at the beginning. And there's some blue screen sort of background shots that just don't look good. And that's kind of throughout the film. Once you get into the most smoky battlefields, it works fine. So it is a bit of a rough start in a lot of ways. But I mean, it works. It gives you that background. You need that background. But you are just waiting for her to get out of Paradise Island and start her journey because it's her film. I did get a little bit tired of the fish out of water stuff. I mean, after about the fourth or fifth time, she walks into a room in London and they're like, oh, a woman can't do this. She's like, why can't I do it? Because I'm a woman. I'm like, we covered this three other times. And it's a 2-hour, 20-minute running time. So those scenes could have been trimmed down a bit. I was worried that Gal Gadot was not going to be a great actress in this movie. And she's not a great actress. She's really stepped up her game, though, for this. She is decent in this movie. She's not a great actress, and in reality, she doesn't do a whole lot of emoting. She does a lot of reaction crying, and she does deliver some heavy lines, but generally, they work around it. She's the weakest link when it comes to actors in this film. And whenever there's a big emotional moment, whether it's like with Chris Pine, who's got the biggest one, or whether it's with Connie Nielsen, or whether it's with Robin Wright, they're the ones who are shouldering the acting ability. And she's reacting to him. And they work around it. And it seems like Patty Jenkins and Warner Brothers realized that. And they said, well, let's work around this. And we're going to structure the story in such a way that we don't have the Oscar clip for Gal Gadot because she's not going to get one anyways. And it reminds me a little bit of Keanu Reeves in The Matrix, where they worked around a lot of his emotional moments. They had other people take him. And hey, if it works for Keanu, why can't it work for Gal Gadot? But when you look at the film itself as an action movie, it works. It has some great scenes. It has some very exciting moments. Her kicking butt as Wonder Woman is exciting and fun, and it works as well as any other superhero that I've seen in the films. I do want to see more with her. I want to see if she can do something more than just react to people emotionally in this movie. And I would like to see something where she actually bleeds because, you know, she's Wonder Woman, so she's powerful and she's sort of partly invincible in certain ways. So there's no real bloody, beaten and still fighting kind of character. And, but that's okay, because it's her opening salvo. And there's a lot more to Wonder Woman to explore. So, I mean, it's a good movie. It rocks.
It rocks. Excellent!
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Wedding Plan, the weekly box office, and the home cinema roundup featuring The Ticket. In your satin tights, fighting for your rights, and the old red, white, and blue. Elizabeth Stokes' new romance novel, Five Nights in Vegas, is about meeting, getting married, and falling in love, in that order. Lexi Frost is a cocktail waitress in a Las Vegas casino. Nate Zimmerman is a marketing executive from back east. After a chance meeting on Nate's business trip, they wake up to discover they got married at an all-night wedding chapel. During their whirlwind attempt to undo their mistake, Lexi and Nate discover they might just be made for each other after all. Five Nights in Vegas by Elizabeth Stokes is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Live fast, die young, bad girls, do it well. Live fast, die young, bad girls, do it well. Live fast, die young, bad girls, do it well. And welcome back to the final segment for Fat Guys at the Movies. I'm going to continue on with the movie reviews. I've got one more to talk about, and this is The Wedding Plan. I don't actually have a trailer for it. It's an Israeli film, which means it's in Hebrew, so you won't understand what they're saying anyways. But let's talk about it, because it is opening. It's rolling out right now in limited release. And I think it opened officially the 12th of May, and this week it is at the Drexel Theater in my hometown of Columbus, Ohio. A single woman in Jerusalem plans her own wedding a month away and must find a groom before it takes place. What's funny about this movie is it was pitched to me as a romantic comedy. And the picture looks very much like a wedding picture movie, like Muriel's Wedding or My Best Friend's Wedding or 27 Dresses or any of these other movies about weddings that you've seen. I mean, it's pink and white and has the key art of the woman, the bride on there. And it's written in nice scripted pink font. And so I'm here expecting kind of like a more mainstream American movie. I didn't even know it was Israeli until I started watching it. And I'm like, whoa, that's Israel. It's pitched that way as a romantic comedy. And I'm just going to warn you right now, it's not. It's not really a romantic comedy. Not in the way that your average Americans would look at a romantic comedy. It does sort of fit that Israeli romantic comedy where Israeli movies tend to be a little heavier. They're serious, dealing with very specific issues. It has certain levels of tradition that would be considered, you know, archaic by American standards. Basically, this woman is, I'm in my 30s and I want to get married. And I'm going to get married whether I like it or not. I need to find the right husband. And generally the message that comes out of American movies is, girl, you don't need no man to make you feel better. You do not have to value your worth as a woman as having a husband. So there is a certain cultural disconnect that we're going to find with this one, but taking it as a very grassroots indie Israeli film, it deals with a lot of, I believe, issues that women are going through at that time. Again, I'm not an Israeli woman living in Jerusalem, so I don't know. But it does seem to deal with some of these religious baggage that comes along with romance and marriage and these cultural baggage that comes along with it. But I have to say it was kind of dull. I admit I fell asleep during that. I had one massive nap attack during this movie, and I did take a big, big, huge nap in the middle of the movie. But I watched the whole thing, and overall, I thought it was fine, but it wasn't exactly my cup of tea. I think if they remade it in America, it would be a very different movie. I think it could be remade in America, but as I just said, it would be an extremely different movie with an extremely different message and extremely different elements to it. So I'm going to have to say The Wedding Plan kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk a little bit about the box office. And was I correct? I was pretty close. I said $80 million for Pirates over the four-day weekend. It made $78.5 million. Like I said, right on the money. Right exactly with what I was saying. I said $30 million for Baywatch or maybe even less. And that second part was more accurate. It made 23. There's no way around the fact that 23 million is a terrible number for Baywatch. And they may not even break even. With that kind of numbers, you may not even break even because I don't know how well it's going to do overseas. But I want to address a couple things about Pirates of the Caribbean, because even before the movie released, the entertainment journalists were writing stories about how bad the movie was going to do. and how the box office in the first month of May, the tent poles aren't doing well. Cause of course you had Alien Covenant not doing terribly well. Diary of a Wimpy Kid and Snatch, neither of them did well, but I don't think anyone was expecting them to be big hits. But the big one, of course, is King Arthur didn't do well. And they're like, oh, is Hollywood in trouble? And you see these stories all the freaking time. But I had to say, I don't know how many times, I'm like, no, the summer movie season starts the first week of May. You had Guardians of the Galaxy doing extremely well. And earlier you had Fate of the Furious, just a couple weeks before that, doing extremely well. And even before that, you had Beauty and the Beast, a March opening. It's cracked $500 million. Not a whole lot of movies have done that on the domestic side. Disney is not worried about their budgets right now because that movie made $1 billion. And that came out in March. That kind of stuff has only been happening in recent years. You would have never in the 80s had a movie come out in March, make $500 million. That kind of stuff is what you see now that the tent poles have all stretched out. But on a more specific note with Pirates, and I said this last week, Pirates of the Caribbean 5 is not a bomb. And I'm seeing people refer to it that way. And I find it hilarious that Wonder Woman's on track to make about the same amount. It might make more, but it's on track to make about the same amount as Pirates did this weekend. At least that's what the tracking is saying. And that's going to be considered a hit. Now, granted, they spent $100 million more to make Pirates of the Caribbean than they did to make Wonder Woman. But still, you can't say that one movie that made $78 million over a long weekend, and then the next week, a movie makes $85 million or whatever, and then that movie's that much bigger of a hit, that $7 million difference is what makes a bomb? I don't think so. That's not how the world works. And on top of it, Pirates 5 was never made for the domestic audience in the first place. It's a global marketplace, people, and that's why movies like XXX, Return of Xander Cage, and Resident Evil, The Final Chapter, are in the top 20 movies of 2017 right now because of the international box office. That's the reason why Warcraft was not a loss of money last year, because it made 10 times internationally what it made in America. And when it comes to Pirates, saying it's a bomb because it made $78 million against a $230 million budget. Did you ignore the fact that it made over $200 million overseas? It made almost $300 million over Memorial Day weekend worldwide. By the time people are going to work on Monday morning, this film will have broken even from an international standpoint. It's not a bomb. This week, though, I think Wonder Woman, I don't know what it's going to make. People are guessing all over the place. The studio's bringing it down into the 70s because they don't want to overstate it. They don't want to say it comes in under expectation. And you've got a lot of people who just want a female superhero movie to do well. I mean, people are predicting over 110 million. I don't think it's going to be that much. Is it possible it might come close to kissing 100 million? That's possible. But it's still going to be the lowest opening of a DC cinematic universe. And that's okay. It's a single movie. You don't compare this to Batman versus Superman. You compare this to something like Thor, Captain America, Ant-Man, Doctor Strange. It's probably going to be right along par with Doctor Strange. I don't think this movie's going to end up cracking $300 million, and that's okay. That does not mean feminism loses. That just means it's going to do fine for a superhero movie that tells an origin story. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Today's spotlight is on The Ticket, which comes out on the 6th, comes out next Tuesday from Shout Factory. It actually was released in April in theaters. A man who has been blind since childhood wakes up with the ability to see again, sending his life on a desperate spiral.
I can see you.
How can a pituitary tumor just disappear overnight?
It's rare, but not unheard of.
What do you think?
This is so strange.
We're gonna have a better life, though. You're gonna get that promotion.
Hear about your husband's newfound work ethic. He's the star of the office.
Golden boy, you just flipped a couple of houses, got yourself promoted. Don't let it go to your head.
I was interested in this movie because it looked like it had an interesting idea of a guy who gets corrupted by regaining his sight. And Dan Stevens, who most people won't recognize from being in Beauty and the Beast, he played the Beast, but he was all CGI'd up. He does a fine job acting in it. The thing I just have to say, I hated this movie. This was the second movie that put me to sleep this week in watching stuff in preparation for the show. You know, I have respect for what they're trying to do, but man, this movie is boring. He just basically becomes an a-hole once he gets his sight back. And for no reason, really. Somehow it changes him, and I just never bought him being so caustic to the people who have helped him over the years. To me, that just shows a bad character. And I don't like movies about people who are bad characters. He just isn't a good person. And like the whole thing is he's doing these like crappy seminars where he's basically trying to rip people off on mortgages. And that's what he considered success, because that's the only job he could get was cold calling garbage accounts. He does these seminars now by telling the same joke. It's like that Alf episode where Alf decides to become a comedian and tells the same joke and realizes he needs a different joke. I don't know how many times we hear this joke told in this movie. It's boring. Unfortunately, the ticket sucks.
It sucks.
Couple other movies that are out this week. Fist Fight is out if you want to see Charlie Day beat up and get beaten up by Ice Cube. The Black Coat's Daughter, which is a thriller I talked about a couple weeks ago on this show. The Shack, which is that religious movie with Sam Worthington and Octavia Spencer. Before I Fall with Zoe Deutsch dying over and over again. And then Collide, which I kind of had a soft spot for because it's got Nicholas Holt and the lovely Felicity Jones. And it's a stupid movie, but it has some enjoyable moments to it. And that's it for this week. I need to go. Next week, I'm going to be talking about It Comes at Night and The Mummy. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.